Thank you for reading how it works, Kevin. I get nervous when I don't hear that. I thank Leanne for asking me to come down, but she's not here. She's out playing music. Hey, what a trip, right? About 2 hours ago, sitting down there, and she walks up and says, this is Brandon. He's going to introduce you because the guy was going to introduce you got drunk last night. So I'm not quite sure what to think. The guy who's introducing me gets drunk, and then I get introduced by BS. And then the person who asked me down is out playing music. I'm not quite sure what's going on here. Yeah. I've been in a Cheech and Chong movie for a lot of years. It's still going on, right? This podium is an interesting thing. I've spoke a few times, and I don't know if any of you are like this, but I got this voice in me, and I'll get in high places sometimes, balconies, you know, where you can lean out? And I lean out, and the voice says, jump! I don't know why, and you're laughing because I know a lot of you have that same voice, but if you see me at times being pulled somewhere, that voice is saying, jump. I don't know what that's about. And quite often that voice does that kind of stuff when my life's going great, too. But I sobered up the morning of October 19th in 1982, and the power of God separated me from alcohol. And that power, and I think a lot of other things along the way, have kept me sober since. And God willing, a little period of time here, I'll have gone 27 years without a drink of alcohol. I was born, I went 16 years without a drink, and I had a relapse. I'm scared of relapses. Mine lasted 20 years. Then I sobered up in October of 82, and here we are again. So it's my second period of sobriety. I tell you the truth, I think I like the second one better than the first one. I think I was 16 or so when I took a drink of alcohol, and I should have took one when I was about 10. Had stuff going on. I'm a member of the Carry This Message group in Austin, Texas. We're a fundamental Orthodox group. We meet every Monday night, open with 5 minutes of meditation, have a chairperson. Someone brings a topic. You can only bring a topic out of the recovery portion of the big book. I told you we were fundamentalists. We can't help it. You can bring up a topic and share your experience with either a sentence or a paragraph. One of the things you'll find probably when I get through sharing with you this evening, one of my defects that showed up in writing inventory, because I write a lot of inventory, is I love to give you my opinion on experiences I never had. See, you're laughing because you all do it too, right? And we made an agreement in our group conscience we were not going to allow that. So whenever the topic is introduced in my home group, part of that introduction is please share your current experience. That old trap, you know, when I came in. See, I can't live off the food I ate 2 weeks ago, and I can't live off of what happened to me when I came in. That's relevant only when I'm sitting across from a new drunk, and we've got to have some degree of identification. Otherwise, it's just another trap. To avoid being where? Here, with you, all of me, every fiber of my being. The only place I get to know God is I've come to know God. Not identified with this mind and its incessant chatter, either in the past or in the future. And, you know, I think one of the reasons that we live as long as we live is we only get about a year of our entire life being where we're actually at, right? You know how that is. You're going to go on a vacation. You plan and plan and plan and plan, and then you're in the plane, and you're not even there yet, and you're already thinking about the trip back, and then you get down there, and you're trying to enjoy it, and by the third day, you're already packed, and it's like, I don't know why we're that way, but we're that way. Spiritual living pulled me out of that, thrust me into the present moment, you know, with myself in that fashion. We'll talk a little bit with you about where I'm at in terms of what I just call the circle and the triangle. I learned quite some time ago to do something I call locate myself. So it's my current experience with that circle and the triangle. I've talked to you about my home group. I do 3 to 5 meetings a week, depending on how much whining and complaining I can stand. And that should have gotten a bigger laugh. Come on, man. Yeah, there we go. All right, that's more like it, Jeff. I don't know. I still find it humorous to this day when a chairperson says, does somebody have a topic? Now, think of who's sitting in the room. The most selfish, self-centered group of human beings on the planet who've been obsessed about themselves all day, and we're going to ask them, do you have a topic? You know? Yeah, they have a topic, right? But I love being sober. I love the program. It gave me a life. I work with the daily disciplines of 10-11. I do that 7 days a week, 365 days a year, and my intent is to do it until I leave this body. And I do that because if I believe my big book, and I do believe my big book, it says that I stand here sober before you because of one reason only, and it's not because I'm Norwegian, and it's not because I'm a nice guy and God loves me, and it says that I stand before you sober because I'm in fit spiritual condition. And I have to assume the responsibility of that, and nobody will do it for me. See, I learned a long time ago this program's a lot more than just about God. Because if it was just about God, the big book would be one page long. It would say, God gets you and keeps you sober. Have a good day. As you all know, it says a whole bunch of things you and I have to do. You have to work those steps and write those inventories and do 5 steps and 6, 7, 8. And then you get over into 10 and 11. There's 4 or 5 pages there with lots of instructions. What to do when you get up in the morning. Very, very clear instructions. And I'm going to talk a little bit about what happened to me when I didn't follow them. I stayed sober. But I wound up in a psychiatric hospital between my 9th and 10th year and almost checked out behind suicide. I was having so much fun. So I have experience not doing 10 and 11 like I'm going to describe to you, and now I have experience doing it. I haven't found necessary to revisit those places except to speak. But I get to leave. It's a wonderful thing. So Monday through Friday, pretty much, I get up at the same time. I've been blessed with going to quite a few monasteries over the years in my sobriety, and I begin to observe some things in those monasteries. They do everything at the same time. So I would go to these monks or the head guy and say, talk to me about this. What is this all about? And they said, well, basically, most humans are slothful and lazy, so what the people who have designed how monasteries have run have realized that, so they discovered if they just do everything at the same time, even on days when they don't want to, they'll get up and they'll pray and meditate and do whatever. I thought, well, if it's good enough for the monks, I ought to give it a shot. So I started doing that many years ago, and it works. 4:30, the eyes pop open. Give myself a little caffeine and get myself a few hits off a cigarette. Then I sit down and pop the big book upon awakening. And I go through and I read all those prayers. I have a couple of meditation books right now. You know, the 11th step. Be quick to see where religious people are right. I'm coming back through another body of work I'll tell you about. I rework 1 through 9 once a year. And Thomas Merton came back into my life. And particularly the stuff he was writing about his last 3 or 4 years, he lived in a hermitage by himself. And it's fascinating reading it because the world you and I live in, and cars and movement and everything else, he's got the same dialogue going on in his mind that you and I do, except he lives in a hermitage with squirrels and raccoons and himself. See? It's fascinating stuff, and I'm doing some work with Emmett Fox. I have done some work with Emmett Fox in the past, but there's 3 books in particular I'm working with right now, and I realized where Bill and Bob got some of our info. Little words like way of living, thought life, live and let live, and a few other things. The 11th step for me is what I do in the morning, ladies and gentlemen, and then in the evening when I do my evening review. There's a whole paragraph in there about things that I'm supposed to be doing at night. And I answer a bunch of questions. It says I constructively review my day. Where was I resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? And I go back through my day and I think about that. Do I owe an apology? was a kind and loving toward all, etc., etc., etc. And it finishes up with asking God for prayer forgiveness to be shown any corrective action. And then I close my eyes and then I go to bed. And then I get up the next day with a clean slate. I do that because these are the things the book says. If I'll do this, I'll stay in fit spiritual condition. And in fit spiritual condition, I'm in a position of neutrality. And I don't have to ever worry about picking up a drink again, because the power of choice has been removed from me in the position of neutrality. And then during the course of the day, I work with all the 10-step tools the book talks about. Things like watch and ask and pause and turn, cease fighting. This month I'm practicing. I grab different words out of the 10-step or phrases, and I practice them for a month at a time. This particular month I'm working with, we have ceased fighting anything or anybody, dash, even alcohol. What does that mean? It means we've ceased fighting anything. That's what it means. To me, this program, in the final analysis, is about 10, 11, and 12, being of service. Not just in the rooms, not just to Elkies, to everybody I interact with. The gal at Starbucks, went over and had a little bite to eat. To the waitress, very busy, eye contact with her. How are you? Someone actually has eye contact with her. Every area of my life, see? 10 to 11. 1 through 9, just get me there. That's all they do. Too much focus at 1 through 9. 1 through 9 is a launching pad to enter the world of the Spirit. Work with 10 to 11 the rest of your life in 12, being of service in every area of your life, your career, relationships, everything. 10 to 11 is the meat, the juice, the power. See? That's where you get to take your awakened spirit out, it out here. Get to wear the world like a loose garment. See? You get to allow people to add to you, but they can't take from you anymore. You truly can have love and tolerance of others becomes a code. And you can begin to practice that. And you go through much less suffering. And life is much funnier. And you're not so serious. The Rule 62 stuff, right? Not so centered on yourself. And you can really be where you're at with an internal sense of ease and comfort. It's impossible to drink from that place. And that's what 10 and 11 is about for me. 1 through 9 just launched me back into that place. Now, all the stuff I'm talking to you about, when I came into the rooms, I went to a detox October 19, 1982. I was living in Denver, Colorado. I hit that detox. They said, you have brain damage, liver damage, kidney damage. Just about everything I own fit in a duffel bag. Living with a gal in Aurora, Colorado, working as an orderly in a nursing home, cleaning up human feces right in the great Jack London story. Because I couldn't separate the true from the false. And slowly and very insidiously, my alcoholism took me down further and further and further and further. But you see, it became normal. I don't have a history of coming in and out of the rooms. I don't have a history of going to rehabs. I don't have any kind of that history. If you ask me to explain to you really what happened after 20 years of drinking, 13 years of outside issues coupled with the drinking, that's another point to laugh. See, that was okay. It's as though that morning, God said, I've got some stuff I need you to do, and you're dumb as an ox, and you're a horrible, hopeless alky, and I'm going to separate you from alcohol, and boom. And I went into that detox center, and I have never once had the inception to take a drink then. See, that's not about me. You understand that? See, that's not about me. You can't self-will your way into spiritual living. A lot of times I do a lot of work with people that have a lot of relapse history. Sometimes in the rooms we say things like this. We say, well, they don't want it. That's BS. That's baloney. Look at how they're living their lives. What do you mean they don't want it? See, you've already forgotten why you're sitting there and they're not sitting there. See, there is a thin window of grace upon that whole thing. The obsession to drink was removed from me. And I had very little of nothing to do with that. Now, where my part came into play was after I got out of that rehab and they got a big book and I started going to meetings and you started thrusting this in front of me and saying, you're going to have to work these steps. And I thought you all were a little bit too serious. See, when I first came in, I thought my problem was alcohol. If your problem is alcohol, you don't need to work the steps because not drinking is your solution. If any of you are sitting here tonight and you're not working steps, you are really misinformed about what's wrong with you. Because you're not working steps, you think your problem is alcohol. The big book says it's a symptom. You don't treat symptoms. You treat the problem. What's the problem? Book uses different words, spiritual malady. Says when the spiritual malady is overcome in Mark, Mark straightens out mentally and physically. You could use the word unmanageability. It describes an internal condition that I get to live with at some point makes me so dis-ease with myself that my mind says, I know what'll make that feel better, Mark. They didn't have Corona when you were drinking. It's been a long time. You were quite a bit younger. Probably handled it. See? That still goes on. By the way, if you're new and you think you're ever going to quit about it, ever going to stop ever not thinking about drinking on occasion, I'm here to share with you. It hasn't happened for me yet, and it probably won't happen for you. I got way too much history that you put me in any situation at all, which I'm the least bit uncomfortable. My mind automatically says,
little drink will help you with this, buddy.
If you think because you get sober that changes, I don't have that experience. The difference is now it's just a thought. It goes through. I recoil from a hot flame. I kind of laugh at it. Keep on moving. Whereas before it went through and my mind said, wonderful idea, let's go. Boom, I'm gone. See? My most graphic example of that, Denver, Colorado. I was up for 5 days drinking, doing some outside issues, and had this little problem. It was called respiratory failure. And those of you who know much about that is you basically die. Your lungs collapse and your heart stops and that kind of stuff. And fortunately for me, I was living with the gal who was a paramedic. And she saved my life. Went on a little flight for life ride from Pine Junction, Colorado, back to Denver to Swedish Hospital. And I was diagnosed with acute alcoholic poisoning and respiratory failure. So they put me in ICU about 3 days. And they wanted to do a little observation. About the fourth night there, my mind said, this has been a pretty harrowing experience. We need a little drink. So I called one of my few remaining pals at that time. He was dumb enough to come down and get me, and I slipped out the door, and I went to the bar and started drinking, and 2 hours after that, I was back engaged with drinking and outside issues. Normal people don't do that, right? See, and you know what's funny? I used to tell that story to guys and gals like you, and we'd all laugh about it. Never once did it occur to us. I was describing dying the alcoholic death, right? See, the very things I used to brag about are all the symptoms I was demonstrating to the world. I was an alcoholic. Because most people that go through what I just described, if you even mentioned alcohol to them, they would run or punch your lights out. Not me. I can't get it fast enough. Told it to someone the other day. We're talking about the first step. We're talking about qualifying. How do you qualify an Elkie? Why do you want to qualify? Well, because my experience is if you suffer from the disease of alcoholism and do not have a revolutionary spiritual experience, you're probably going to die. So I think it's important to know, am I one of these? Right? And we were kind of joking around. I said, well, there is actually a real simple way. He goes, well, what's that? And I said, well, if you take 10 people, and you take them up to a cabin, and I said, you feed them alcohol every day, put it in every orifice of their body, IVs, everything. At the end of 1 month, it's real easy to tell who the alky is. And he said, what do you mean? And I said, it's simple. Just say, who would like to leave? And I said, about 8 of those people are going to walk out of that room. If they ever see a drink again, they're going to puke. The other 2 guys will want to marry you. See, because we take a drink, we break out in a phenomenon called craving, and then I'm going to drink till the drink is satisfied. And I don't get to decide when that lets go of me. My last drink literally lasted 1.5 years before God separated me from alcohol. I have experience when I go back and look at the first step about the phenomenon of craving. That happened to me very early on, within my first year of drinking. Because I really go back and look at the first step. As far as I can tell, the foundation, the bedrock that keeps me doing the things that I still do to stay in fit spiritual condition is all founded in my first step experience and my connection to that. Nothing, I'm going to say this again, nothing gets in front of what I have to do to stay in fit spiritual condition. But if I lose my first step condition, first step experience, and what is really wrong with me, all kinds of things get in front of that. Like what? Job, relationships, career, money, etc., etc., etc. If I stay connected to my first step, nothing gets in front of it. Because you see, if a guy like me doesn't stay sober, I don't have anything. I don't know how you drink. I know how I drink. There's only one person going to be satisfied through this episode, and that's me. And at some point in time, you will drive away every other human being in your life, and you'll drive away your employer, and you'll drive away everyone else. You know, you hear sometimes, you know, it's a selfish program. I suppose if there's any element, because the truth is, the program says above everything, I have to be rid of selfishness. But I don't believe it's selfish when, for my survival, I need to stay acutely aware of what I need to do on a daily basis. Give you an example. I just took a vacation to Sedona, Arizona. I don't know how many of you have ever been there. It's an amazing place. It's a place that will force you into silence. If you're a talker, it'll drive you crazy. A lot of power up there. I went to five AA meetings, you know, staying in this real nice place. Well, time to go to an AA meeting. In a town, I don't know a single person. Why would I do that? Why would I disrupt my vacation to go to an AA meeting? Because I was in a town, I didn't know anybody, that's why. And you see, I get a little uncomfortable. And if I get a little uncomfortable, that voice says, hey, Mark, I'm here for you, buddy. So I go to an AA meeting. But it's all about my first step experience. That's why I think the big book spends so much time talking to me about, Mark, are you a real alcoholic? 33 pages, this thing called the craving. Do you have that? And I see that when I was 16 years old, took my first drink, I broke out in a phenomenon called craving. I still remember driving a car, case of beer, three pals with me. I'm driving the car, and I'd probably drank half that case. Two of the guys are puking, the other's getting ready to, and I'm just getting started. That's because of a phenomenon called craving. I didn't know that for the longest time. But the big book has 33 pages for me to look at, do I have this? Now, that's kind of crazy, isn't it? Don't you think that'd be a pretty simple question? If you walk up to one of us and you're talking, say, let me ask a question. Based on your experience, when you take a drink, do you have power, choice, and control over how much you drink? Now, don't you think that would be fairly easy to answer? You would think so, but not us. Because, see, if I say yes to that, that's not good news. Because you all are going to tell me some stuff. So the big book has all kinds of different things to get me to look at this. They define a moderate drinker. I wasn't in that class. Said they can take it or leave it alone. I don't fit that. Then there was a hard drinker. I get excited still when I look at the hard drinker. Because I... See, we all got a chance. You know, you're not much different than me. That blues is playing down there. That, you know, that music, you know, loud music. You know, I love to bars and chase women and drink and fights. You know, it's playing that calls you. You see? It's every time back through the steps. You know, am I a real alky? I don't know. Boy, look at that hard drinker, you know. He causing me to die a few years before his time. Yep, that's me. You know, imperative physically and mentally. Yeah, that's me too. You know, then it goes on. It's got these little kickers in there. But it says that if you're just a hard drinker, not a real alcoholic, if we give you a sufficient reason and then name some, this guy can stop or he can moderate. So I have to lay my experience along. Was I able to stop? Was I able to stay stopped? Forget moderation. That's out of the equation. I kind of like to work with stop and stay stopped. Yeah, in the best of my memory, the only time in the 20 years from my first drink to my last drink that I really was stopped for any length of time, it's when I was stopped and could not get a hold of anything. Like in the military, there were certain situations. There was a woman one time, I think I made it 10 days for her. Jesus, never again. I sacrificed too much. But I needed a place to live, and it was her house. And then I was going up to Carbondale, Colorado, and the voice, "You've been good." Little Pat's Blue Ribbon on the drive up the mountain wouldn't be a bad deal. 6 days later, waking up in a hotel in Carbondale saying, "Oh, my God, how'd I get here again?" And not knowing why, you know. It's crazy. You drink 20 years and very seldom in all that time period did I ever say, "I'm an alcoholic," or "I got a problem with alcohol." That's just the truth. You know, one of the things I really have looked at over the years is the effect produced by alcohol. And I assure you what it does to us, it does not do to a whole bunch of people out here. And the reason I say that is because in spite of horrific consequences, we keep going back. So I started to look at, what does this stuff do to me? Well, you know, they call it spirits. Whole insides get to tingling. Start to feel a part of, and the fears go away, and you get taller and smarter and faster. And all of these kinds of incredible things go on. You know, you can have fun if you know any normies. You take some of the drunk questions and run them by normies. You know, listen, what's the effect alcohol have on you? And typically, you can really tell when you got someone who has no problem with alcohol because they'll go, "What do you mean?" You know? Like, ask them, "Have you ever lost power, choice, and control once you take a drink?" And they'll go, "What do you mean? What are you talking about?" I had a woman say to me one day, she said, "Why would I do that?" You know? "Do you ever get drunk?" "Yeah, when I choose to." You see what I'm saying? They have completely different set of answers for all those questions, you know. But I saw my truth, you know, pages 23 to 43, I think, probably the most least understood pages in the big book, and every time through, this year I went back through in April. And in those pages, they're talking to me about being sober, and do I have an experience sober of my mind taking me back to a drink? And they describe several different states of mind sober. And do I have an experience where I commit the most insane act of my life, stone cold sober? See, there's all this talk about drinking. Once you get separated from alcohol, the most insane thing I have ever done, I do sober. And that is that my mind convinces me to take a drink, and I go take the drink. And there's three little words in those pages that are very easy for us to get. You know what they are? At certain times. Mark has no effective mental defense against the first drink. That implies, perhaps, I don't have a clue when it's coming. Now, if that is true, and I only stay sober through being in fit spiritual condition, I don't have the luxury to not do the disciplines of 10 or 11 every day till I die. Do I? I hope some of you look at what I'm talking about. Very few people ever get sober and stay sober and die sober. It's a deadly thing. In addition to being a member of AA, I've worked in the field of chemical dependency now for about 18 years. Buried hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them. They used to die in our rooms. Now they don't. Now there's a screen of hospitals and treatment centers. They used to die sitting in the rooms. My first 3 years in Denver, Colorado, I remember there were 14 women, probably in about a four-month period at York Street, died of alcoholism. You'd have a guy sitting right next to you, and he'd pick up a drink, and 3 days later, he'd be dead. That'd catch your attention. Now it don't happen in the rooms anymore. You see what I'm saying? So what happens behind that? There's this subtle thing of, if I relapse, I'll come back. Really? Not so. Alcoholism is a deadly disease. People say, "Oh, you're so serious." Now, that's normally the guy that's relapsed 12 times and has got a week talking to me. Right? See, alcohol takes away my rights to live on and operate and move on this planet as a free man. See, when I take a drink, I may as well... This is what it would look like, actually, if I was really going to do this right. Let's say I had a week to prepare for this. I would liquidate everything, get all the cash I can. Get rid of the nice car. Just give me a war wagon. Beat up. Write letters or make phone calls to everyone who gives a shit about me and say, you won't see me again, probably. And if I know how to get in your house, change the locks. And then I get done with all that, and then I go find me a place. And then I just buy mounds or whatever it is I'm going for, because out to me, you see, that's where I go. And I may as well turn in my driver's license, and my way is go down to the bank and say, just close them all. Because otherwise, well, because I'm going to be writing checks and money I don't have, that's why. See, that's what I do when I drink. You see what I'm saying? Book says, you know, we're like a tornado. So, yeah, do I take the disciplines of 10 or 11 seriously? Absolutely. Do I take alcoholism seriously? Yes, I do. See, I like the life I have today. I like being able this morning to get up and do the disciplines of 10 or 11. Sit in a nice house and little confusion about what to bring because I've got more clothes than I know what to do with. See, I didn't have that problem when I get sober. See, have a choice of two cars. I didn't have a car. I had two pairs of tennis shoes. See, it's the little things getting sober is really neat about, right? You know? Which sport coat to bring, you know? What's a sport coat when I got sober? I rode a bus for almost 2 years. You know, on cash. You know, money. Current driver's license? Wow. Electrical company actually sends me a bill and floats me electricity. They weren't doing that when I got sober. And they said they weren't going to do that unless I gave them a whole bunch of money. So, oh, getting sober is great, right? You don't have a dime. You want to go in and get a cell phone. Yeah, I'll be a $1,000 deposit. Like a little auto insurance. Yeah, it's an SR-22. That's $3,000. You know? Go, oh, I love being sober, ladies and gentlemen. And I never forget that. You know, God's got to come first in Mark Houston's life. Well, Mark Houston doesn't have a life. And sometimes I think what that translates to, the people who care about me, is they're coming second. And I don't apologize for that because they're not the ones that have to live with it when I pick up the drink. And I know myself well enough because from the space where I'm going to move back there, I begin to deal a lot with self-will run riot, and that isn't a pretty picture either. You know, that line in the big book, if my arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as I wish, the show would be great. The sounds here this evening are fabulous, right? Got a blues band, man, we got the train, you know, it's just, God, it's perfect for Elkies. I want to talk to you a little bit about some things. I don't know if I'd call them mistakes. I probably would be. Let me ask you a question. I want to get a feel for the room. How many of you have a year or under? Do you mind raising your hands? Okay. Cool. Well, I'm going to speak to you, but I'll speak to everybody. Recovery is not about sprinting. It's about being a marathon runner. One day at a time, we do this. I mean that. One day at a time, we do this. And one day leads to a week, and a week leads to a month, and a month leads to a year. So get rid of this idea there's some arrival place. There's not. There's staying sober and having a great life. Immerse yourself in step work. Just going to meetings will not treat what is wrong with me. I paid that price two or three times in my recovery, where there was too much focus on the meeting trying to treat this internal condition, and it doesn't do that. Stay centered in that circle and that triangle, that balance between meetings between sponsorship being of service and between your own body of work. By it being my own body of work, it's what I'm doing with the steps, not what my sponsees are doing. It's what I'm doing. What's my body of work? What am I doing with 10? What am I doing with 11? Am I working with any other books? You know, again, the big book, be quick to see where religious people write, make use of what they have to offer. AA's kindergarten when it comes to what's out there. Incredible stuff out there. Do that along with, not instead of. The steps were given to me by God to live life, stay sober, have an incredible life. It's the methodology that's given to me. Now, I do a lot of things along with that. I have over the years. Order of St. Benedict. Self-Realization Fellowship, learning a lot about meditation. Native American, Tonkashula. 3 years doing some work with a Native American, doing sweats, getting reconnected to Mother Earth. Silent retreats, mysticism, Catholicism, all of it along with, never instead of. Why? Because they don't talk drunk talk. That's why. I've watched people pray themselves back into whiskey. See, you're my tribe. And you're everywhere I go. And I got to stay hooked to my tribe because you and I got a special language and nobody else talks it. Nobody else talks it. And I got to be around my tribe. If I lose my tribe, I'm in trouble. See, you understand me. You know, you understand, for example, my life could be absolutely incredible. And I would say to you, jump. You go, oh, I've been there, Mark, for sure. Right? You know? See, you get me. You understand me. You know, I have a connection that I've never been able to get anywhere else. So I got to stay a part of my tribe and the practices of my tribe, which are the 12 steps, the disciplines of 10 or 11. But then I get to go out and do other exciting stuff. A lot of neat stuff out there. Amazing. Open-minded. You know, incredible literature to read. Churches to go to. Priests to talk to. Ministers to talk to. Monks to talk to. Great stuff. Go talk to some of these Native American people. If a medicine man will let you get close to them, talk with them. Power. What amazing stuff, see, comes to us. To this process, the steps. Get a home group. Stay involved with the home group. Go to group conscience. Don Pritz, he was the man who really carried the message to me as a world trustee of AA's. Passed away now. He's been dead about 3 or 4 years. And he used to say, every problem in the rooms of AA could be solved by good sponsorship. You know what? He's absolutely right. He taught me everything from what to talk about in a meeting to how long to talk to show up to group conscious, etc., 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 etc. See, I want AA to be here for a long time. I want this tribe to be here. And I'll go to any lengths to bring that about. If I see traditions being violated, I'm going to talk about it, etc. See? It's important. Where would we be if AA wasn't here? Because looking at some of your faces, you'd be about where I'd be. We don't know, right? What a great gift we've been given in here. Stay in the rooms. Your ego and the world will pull you out. It's funny, we were standing down there just before we came up here. Lady and her, I think her boyfriend, drinking brewskis. We're standing there. I've got the big book. It says the big book says that I believe it. That settles it, right? Sitting at the table next to her, and they're drinking brewskis. And we get to chat, and she says, yeah, I went to a convention a few years ago. She sees this speaker, right? You know. Anyhow, they didn't stay out very long chatting with me. Stick around. See? Keep your friends close. Know who your friends are. When I go back to the steps, we did this in April, myself and three of my pals. And I sat with four questions before I reworked the first nine steps. Now, let me tell you why I reworked the first nine steps. There's a couple different belief systems I think operating in the rooms. Here's all I'll say about this. Work with the one that feeds you. One of them is you work steps 1 through 9 and live in 10, 11, 12. Cool. That's one of them. Whatever your sponsorship lineage looks like will determine probably your belief systems in this area. My sponsorship lineage said, revisit 1 through 9 every year one time because it's an exciting experience. So, you do transmit what you have. You cannot transmit what you don't have. That's what's transmitted to me. That's all I know. This idea of I'm going to do 1 through 9 one time and live in 10, 11, 12. I don't have experience with that working for me. I'm talking about me. But here's the other thing. If you had such a profound experience working 1 through 9 one time, who wouldn't want to go for that juice again? Right? Just something to think about. But I sat with four questions. Here's the first question. Because I believe that for me, to drink is to die. So the first question is, do I want to live? Period. Do I want to continue to live? Here's the second question. Do I want to continue to live with the 12 steps of the program as my anchor to God, to life, to staying sober? Third question. Am I willing to go to any lengths again? See, over the years, what I have learned about these steps and about God, it's about real power. And if I'm going to submit to this process again, I long ago had to let God go of the idea that I'm going to work these steps and wonderful stuff's going to happen for Mark. I worked the steps one time, had physical health problems, lost a job, was unemployed for 5 months. I could go on, was in a car wreck. Work these steps, great stuff will happen, right? Oh, yeah, you betcha. That's why if you're sober for a while and your life's going great, resubmitting to the steps, because what they do, by the time I got back up to the 10th step this time, old belief systems, which are now new belief systems, got shattered. And now I'm on shaky ground again. My life was real good in April. So I said, I don't know if I want to do that or not. That was our agreement. Here's the fourth. Am I living my life, who I'm hanging out with, my home group, my disciplines, everything I'm doing, am I living my life in such a way that it supports my decision to live? So I sat with those four questions for 1 week. And then me and three of my pals got together, and we reviewed the first three steps. Craving of the body, the obsession of the mind. We looked at what I called our current spiritual malady, our current unmanageability. These are the areas of your life, and all of you have them. You have areas of your life that you have some dis-ease with. Could be financial, might be relationships, it could be health, it could be whatever. But it's your current unmanageability, which is probably the driving force behind ultimately taking a drink, isn't it? We looked at that. We talked about that. We gave it a name. We spoke it. And then we moved into the second step. Now, I've been sober a long time. I have a relationship, conscious contact with a living, loving God. It's not a relationship based in duality. God and I are closer than breath. If God's water, I'm the fish and I'm immersed. But I got some stuff going on and I got some current agnosticism. Here's what I mean. If some of you have a little reaction to this, it's a good thing. Because every person in here has got some current agnosticism going on. It's easy to tell. Take a look at the last week and look at things you're afraid of and look at what's bothering you. That's your areas of current agnosticism where there is no God. And where you're still trying to somehow run the show. So the second step for us this time is there a God who can take me past here and to all these areas I don't know anything about? Who can help me with this? See, how do I manage my power? How do I manage work, career, relationships, money, credit card, taxes, fear, economics? How do I do that on my power? How do I manage this without God? Is there more past here? Is there dimensions of God I know nothing about, I can be taken to, I can experience? Yes. Yes, willing to go for that. Come up to the third step. Am I convinced my life run of my will, 26 years sober, cannot and will not work? So I sit and look at the areas in which I'm trying to run my life on my will. Actually, this is a great frame of reference. When I do this, this will be another great exercise I'll give you guys. Pretend that you're in a real small amphitheater and there's this big throne chair on this little stage and that's where you're at. And down below, but kind of close, because you really need to hear what you have to say, are all the people that are important to you, whose lives you're trying to manage. Yeah, mom and dad and him and her and the kids and blah, 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 blah. And they're all right down here in your little amphitheater. You can look down at them. And if my arrangements would only stay put, and if only you do as I wish, the show would be. Can't you feel it? Jeez, I still get excited when I do that exercise. See, because I believe that. See, every Sunday, FedEx delivered to all the people in my life I interact with, your script for the week of how you're supposed to interact with me. And what I need from you to be okay. So you're laughing because you're just like me. Problem is, we never send them out. Nor do we tell them that. We just get angry at them. See? Telling you, jump on. Let's jump. Yeah. So you sit with that. If my range was to only stay put, and you see that elements of self well, how it showed up again. And then the book gets into Mark. Here's what your problem is. You're selfish and you're self-centered. Above everything, you must be rid of this or it will kill you, Mark. That line in there, all Mark's troubles are my own making. One of the most powerful statements of hope you'll ever hear in your life. See, I'm responsible for my life, every aspect of my life. You can add to my life, but you can't take away from me anymore, because all my troubles are my own making, and I get that at a deep interior level, because that's where there's power and juice going on. Then I made that third step decision again. Then we said the prayer. We gave ourselves 1 week to write inventory. Had 5 names, had about 21 resentments. Then on the fears, I write on the big 6, which winds up being 12. Here's what I mean. Got a fear of failure, got a fear of success. Got a fear of living, got a fear of dying. Got a fear of getting drunk, got a fear of staying sober. Got a fear of being accepted, got a fear of being rejected. Got a fear of being alone, got a fear of being someone. See, how do you, it's no wonder we drink. See, it's like this, right? It's like, okay, I'm alone now, I'm lonely. I got to have a woman in my life. Cool. So you go out and you start dating, you do whatever, and then she's in your life. And then you're going, oh, God, how'd I know, how'd I get out of this? And then you get out, and then you, oh, God, I'm lonely. Right? You know, you walk into a room, I'm so afraid that nobody will accept me, and then they do, and you don't know what to do with that. You know, it's like, well, I'm afraid they'll call me in a meeting. I'm afraid they won't. You did. It's that's why we drink. It's crazy. Afraid I won't get the promotion. Afraid I will. You know, you just, but those 6 are enough, those 12. And I see all my agnosticism shows up in all those places still. You know, no God. And then sex inventory. Then we met as a group. And then we read this inventory to each other. And then we used a tool called Sacraments of Penance to identify the exact nature of our character defects, of which there were many. amazing. And then we did the 7-step prayer together, and then we made our list. And I had 7 amends out of that, and I made those amends. And now I'm walking back in steps 10 to 11. And it's all meaty, and it's all juicy, and it's all new. And meditation is sweet again. And I can feel God, and it's closer again. See, but it's new ground. You know, there's some of this stuff with Thomas Merton. Whoo! Blowing the top of my head off here. Some of the stuff with Emmett Fox, you know. Amazing stuff. Just light world. Just like it swoops in on you. Colors and vibrancy and see, why would you not want to do that? Why would you not want to go back through and have that experience I just described? See? Tap into that again. You know, when the big book says it's about depth and weight, ladies and gentlemen, my experience it is. But if you go to the ocean with a thimble, you get a thimble full of water. How much of this you want? It's up to you. See? You don't get it by osmosis. You get it by what? It's the spiritual program of action. That's exactly what it means. God don't have no grandchildren. How much of God you want? It's there for the taking. I don't know about you, but I this is the way my life seems to have rolled. There's either got to be a lot of me and God going on, or there's going to be a lot of whiskey. Me and whiskey. For whatever reason, there's nothing in between that. And it seems like if I'll develop that relationship, if I'll do those disciplines of 10 and 11, my life gets blessed beyond my wildest dream. You know, I was thinking about that not long ago when I sobered up in Denver at the condition of my life. For that matter, when I came to Texas in 1991, driving a 78 Saab and $100 worth in my pocket. Got a chance to go speak all over the United States, Europe, work with thousands and thousands of men and women doing workshops, talking about God, talking about the steps. For free? See? For fun and for free? My God, when I sobered up, I would have had to be cremated because I couldn't have found six people to carry my casket. And now I have a choice. See? There's a lot of gifts in being sober for a guy like me. Now, I'm still going to get cremated, but, you know. And there would be more than six people there. See? What a thing that is. See, and I get all this because I stay sober. And then I was given this big book, and I was given a way of living beyond anything that I could have imagined. But I think like the book says, I've got to mine it. See, I got to mine it. How bad do you want God? You know, sometimes I burn with this desire for this God that I'm talking about. And I had nothing to do with the burn either. See? At some point in time, the futility of seeking overcame me as well. And I realized, my God, there's nothing to seek. You need to just wake up to that which is always present to you. That you can't understand. Most of it is mystical. Most of it doesn't have an explanation to it, but it doesn't need to. See? I think it's the only game in town. I think we love it. I think we should love it. You know, all of it. Love the pain. Love the sadness. Love the joy. See, every bit of it. You know, but that's all here. So God bless you. That's all I got.